Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is deeper understanding. Each of my guests is giving us deeper understanding of his or her subject, whether it's corruption in college football, Steve McQueen, or world travel. My next guest is a celebrity biographer who is known for his biography of Ronald Reagan during his Hollywood years, among others. He's turned his attention to one of America's legendary movie stars, known as much for his turbulent life off the screen as his movies. We'll examine the biography of Steve McQueen, and if you want to join in the conversation, or if you have a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. Mark Elliott is the New York Times best-selling author of more than a dozen books on popular culture, among them the highly acclaimed biography Cary Grant, the award-winning Walt Disney, Hollywood's Dark Prince, and American Rebel, The Life of Clint Eastwood, plus the music biographies Down Thunder Road, The Making of Bruce Springsteen, To the Limit, The Untold Story of the Eagles, and The Death of a Rebel about Phil Oakes. He has been featured in many documentaries about film and music, and he's written on the media and popular culture for numerous publications. Mark divides his time between New York City, Woodstock, New York, and Los Angeles. Joining us from New York City, how are you today, Mark?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Well, I am doing terrific. Thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. I have several of your other biographies, so I was thrilled to have you come on and talk about Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen is famous for so many of his movies. I mean, the ones that stand out in my mind, The Magnificent Seven, The Great Escape, The Thomas Crown Affair, The Sand Pebble, Bullet, all of those. Great, great movies. Even
those,
The Tower...
Those are my favorites of his movies.
Oh, how about that?
As mentioned.
Even The Towering Inferno, which, you know, is toward the end of... towards the end of his career. He was, in my mind, he was the epitome of cool. I mean, off screen, however, Steve McQueen was very complex. He was a very conflicted figure. What drew you to write about Steve McQueen in the first place?
Well, I realized when I was writing about Clint Eastwood that there was a great similarity between these two actors who were both not really a part of the Hollywood system. Clint especially... has his own production company, makes the movies he wants to make, and knows exactly what his targets and his arrows are, how they line up. Steve was potentially that, too. You know, they both are the same age. They were both born the same year. They both began in television just about the same time in Westerns, and then they both jumped to the movies. The difference between the two of them was that Clint Eastwood was a kind of let's take the shot and go to the golf course type of actor, readily admittedly. Steve had early on in New York City been trained as a method actor, and I think that the method acting training kind of ruined him as as an actor, because rather than being an original Steve McQueen, in the beginning he wanted to be the next Marlon Brando and or the next James Dean. And that was just not who he was. When he left all of that behind and became more of the unique figure he was, his problem was that he was concerned that he didn't have a method, he didn't have a technique on screen, and that kind of left him floating without an anchor, whereas Clint Eastwood doesn't really concern himself with that. He will say to a director, "You're the director, you direct. I'm the actor, I'll act. And together we'll make a terrific movie." Steve never trusted directors, never trusted producers, never liked writers. He always thought that scripts were better if they had as few words as possible. And his persona was a little bit bent on screen. For all his great reputation as a womanizer, as a romantic figure, he made almost no movies where romance is a major part of the story. Maybe the Thomas Crown Affair,
right,
is about the only one of his bigger movies that involves romance. He's really someone who is almost existential in his need to prove his existence through speed, through action, through feats of strength and courage rather than winning the woman. And that makes him also a little bit like Clint Eastwood, who was never, on screen at least, a ladies' man. So these are kind of post-studio, modernist, independent actors who brought their persona to the screen as it was. And it's the magic that they bring with their talent that the screen loves, and therefore we love.
Uh-huh.
McQueen, for a couple of years, worked on Broadway. He didn't do anything. There was nothing there. He did some work on live TV out of New York. He was okay, nothing special. But when he went into the TV series, he began to find his rhythm, Wanted Dead or Alive, but it was the big screen that uncovered his charismatic greatness. And although he only made 28 movies, he only had a 20-year window of a career, which is one of the reasons that Steve McQueen never grows old on screen. You know, we look at Spencer Tracy, we say, oh, there's that young Spencer Tracy, and now at the end, look how old he got and frail. That doesn't happen with Steve McQueen. He's essentially the same character from the beginning, when he's a 30-year-old teenager in The Blob, up until the end when he's once more a bounty hunter in The Hunter, his last film. So he's a fascinating, timeless character, and because of things like Turner Classic Movies and DVDs, we have the privilege today of saying, you know, I want to see Steve McQueen on a screen, and we can do it. So we can all be experts and scholars in the art of Steve McQueen acting. And that's something back in his day really didn't exist. So in some ways, he's a bigger star now than he was when he was alive.
My guest is Mark Elliott, biographer of Steve McQueen, among other biographies that he's done. I want to continue down this line of compare and contrast between Clint Eastwood and Steve McQueen, because I think that's kind of interesting. I read it a little bit differently, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I look at both McQueen and Eastwood being at the tail end of the studio system, as you said, in that twilight period between the superstar actor and the end of the studio system. And the difference in my mind was Clint Eastwood understood the business of movies, whereas Steve McQueen didn't. He understood how to act, but he really scorned the producers. He scorned the directors. As you said, he was scornful of the writers themselves. He didn't understand the business behind him, whereas Eastwood did, and then he came on to become very famous director in and of his own right. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, they both were products of the dying days of the studio system. Clint was actually a studio player for Universal and got fired for having no talent. They said he and who was it? He and Burt Reynolds were both fired the same day for not having talent. So as studio actors, studio-era actors, they didn't have a chance to flourish because they were off-beat. They were off-kilter, so to speak. There's no question that Clint Eastwood was the businessman of the two. His Malpaso Productions made him, first of all, enormously wealthy, but beyond that, allowed him to choose the projects that he wanted to make. And if he wanted to direct them, he could direct them. If he wanted to act in them, he could act in them. But his choices are incredibly canny for an actor. Steve's producing was a disaster. He tried to make this movie Le Mans, and he wound up broke, divorced, owing the government a ton of money. He did not have a business head, but he wasn't trained for that. He was... you know, he was a plumber when he was before he went to acting school. He was an East Coast guy, even though he was born in the Midwest. He was trained in New York as a New York actor. Clint Eastwood was a West Coast guy. He didn't have those pressures and that competitive edge. The difference being, for example, that Steve stayed in Wanted Dead or Alive for 3 years and got out, while Clint was in
Rawhide
for 8 years, learning his craft, learning the business of making movies. And, you know, their personality types were different. And the other thing that should be addressed in response to your question is that Steve McQueen died so young. The last film he did, where he played the bounty hunter, the hunter, the director was fired. And Steve wanted to take over directing of the film, but because of the rules of the Directors Guild, if you're in a movie and a director is fired, you can't get that job. It's to protect directors. So he never had the chance to move up that ladder. Now, Clint Eastwood didn't direct a film until, I think, after Steve died. I think his first film was Play Misty for Me.
Right.
And that changed his career. That changed the course of his career, business-wise and in terms of acting, producing, and directing. Steve never had that opportunity. Had he lived, he might have outgrown some of the more audacious aspects of his personality and life and come to a better understanding of what the business of show business is all about.
All right, my guest is Mark Elliott, author of the biography Steve McQueen. And Mark, I want to ask you, what ways did Steve McQueen's childhood impact his adult life that I would pretty much summarize as drugs, fast car, and fast women?
Well, he was the product of a one-night stand. His father was a circus stunt pilot. His mother was a girl of easy virtue, we'll say. The father left, abandoned them. He was handed over to an uncle, and the mother came and took him back, then gave him back to the uncle. Finally, he ran away from home and joined a street gang. He was eventually arrested, put into a home for juvenile delinquents, and a reform school. And it was out of that that he began this lifelong search for not only his mother, but a mother. And when he meets his first wife, who is a couple of years older than him, in New York, while he's struggling, she was a very famous Broadway star, Neil Adams. And she had a big nurture factor going. She loved nurturing him and treating him like her beautiful little boy. He tested her loyalty to a point where finally they got divorced, and that kind of reinforced to him the fact that he was unlovable. The second wife, Allie McGraw, had no maternal instincts at all, and she didn't want to play the game, and she left and resumed her own career. It was only the third wife, who was much younger than him, that allowed him to play the father role. Now, here's what's interesting. He was born in a small town. He died in a small town. His mother was young and beautiful. His third wife was young and beautiful. His father was a stunt pilot for a circus. Steve, in the last year of his life, bought a plane and tried to learn how to be a stunt pilot. So you see that if you track the arc of his life from the beginning to the end, the middle part where all the action is serves as a link for someone who was desperate to really have a family, be loved, and live a simpler life. And that is something that he almost achieved until he got sick and died rather quickly.
And died prematurely, without a doubt. Mark, yeah. Is Steve McQueen in danger of being forgotten, do you think?
No, I don't think he was ever forgotten. I think television, movie channels, and DVDs have kept him around, but interestingly, I think he's more popular now. Songs being written about him, and people have him on their T-shirts. His motorcycle thing now is very much in vogue. Back then, it was seen as more of an outlaw thing. So I think he's one of those actors, like Cary Grant, who is so timeless and so interesting and magnetic that I don't think he'll be forgotten for quite a long time.
All right, then let me ask you to gaze into your crystal ball. How will Steve McQueen be remembered, say, 15 years from now?
I think he'll be remembered as one of the 20th century rebels of the screen, with James Dean, Brando, Montgomery Clift, Paul Newman. These are guys who were enormously appealing, had a magic about them, and played, for the most part, counterculture figures who became heroic in their rebellion. I think he'll be remembered as a group of transitional actors who took acting out of the Hollywood, turn this way, turn that way, put your best profile to the camera, to actors who acted out of a sense of inner need. I think he was one of those.
Very well put. My guest is Mark Elliott, biographer of Steve McQueen. His latest book is Steve McQueen, A Biography. What do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Steve McQueen?
Well, when you read a biography, I think it's like watching a magic trick. You start to learn how the trick is done, and the magic disappears. But then at the end, it all comes back together again, and the magic returns. And I think that people will understand better not only what made Steve tick, if I may, but the industry that allowed him to tick, what the movie business of his era was all about, and who he was, both on the screen and off the screen, who he was and who he wanted to be. I think that's what this book really gives to a reader.
It's a fascinating read. It's Steve McQueen, A Biography. I've been talking to Mark Elliott, the author. Mark, if people are intrigued by what you say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I have a website. It's markelliott.net, easy to find. The book is everywhere, Amazon, bookstores, pretty much all over the place. If you go to my website, markelliott.net, you can find out about all the other things I've done and what I'm up to these
days. And that website is markelliott, markelliott.net. Mark, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.